Gather around your speakers, hoop heads. It's NBA story time. Jamel Johnson here to spin you tales of NBA shenanigans you didn't know you needed to know. Like that time when a little startup league tried anything to be relevant, or when Ricky Davis earned himself a dumb nickname. I also love you, Ricky Davis. Catch a new tale on NBA Storytime every week, then listen to the postgame where I break it down with comedians, ballers, and what have you. Find NBA Storytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Guys, what's up? I want to take a quick second to let you guys know that our podcast is supported by Anchor. That's right. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. I'm doing this ad from my phone as we speak. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. Evidently, I can't talk. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Now back to the show.
100 episodes, Wash Up Walk-Ons fans. This is something that we never saw coming. We are so grateful for all the support that you have given us over these 100 episodes. And we're going to try and thank you with this episode right here. Number 100 with the legend of Iowa football, Chad Greenway. I know you're going to enjoy this episode. Sit back and relax. Let's have a day. Let's go.
Welcome back, Washed Up Walk-Ons fans, to the episode we've been talking about for a while. We finally made it to episode 100. It's pretty special for a few reasons. Obviously, didn't expect to make it 100 episodes in with people still caring what any of us had to say, much less looking forward to it. So that's pretty cool. But much more importantly than that, it's because we have probably the coolest guest that we could have possibly gotten for this episode because it's a guy that we've all been looking up to for so long. A guy who to me seemed larger than life as I was watching him live in the Outback Bowl in 2005, where he was in fact on sides, and I know the Hawks went on to win that game. In my mind, I don't know what happened in reality. That's the reality I live in, though, is that the Hawks are the 2005 Outback Bowl champs and the refs didn't fuck us out of that one. Man, I could go on in this intro for a while, but I'm just going to leave it at this is a legend of the game of football. Definitely one of my idols and the owner of the best tasting vodka in the world, Chad Greenway.
Well done. 18 looks good on you too.
Yeah, man. I had to put the jersey on.
I would say that's a Micah Hyde. I have a ton of Micah Hyde jerseys in my garage.
Oh, there you go. See that?
Where did 18 come from?
That's a good question. So I was on my recruiting visit November 11th, 2000.
Wow.
Iowa versus Northwestern. Iowa upsets Northwestern when we were just terrible. Absolute dog shit, 2-9. That was my recruiting visit. That's when I got my offer. And they had given me number 8, which was my high school number. And of course, I was a quarterback. I was obviously the best thing since sliced bread. And I thought I'd be number 8, be the quarterback, you know, be the next Kyle McCann. And then away you go. I come here and CJ Jones, who was a receiver, JUCO receiver transfer, was number 8, and I got 18 because I was a nobody and I didn't know it yet. So
yeah,
I was a nobody, became 18, and here we go. That's how it went. And then I got a chance to change it. I was like, what am I gonna do? I mean, I'm not gonna go like a 50 number. So I just rocked 18.
That's usually how it turns out. I feel like Morris just kind of throws you a number, and it's like
if he throws you anything.
Yeah.
Back then it was like big old Reeboks and just nasty stuff, especially for the freshman. He didn't give us anything. I'm sure it was the same for you guys.
Oh,
there was a point in my career where I was actually a playing player, and he was still trying to give me used game stuff, man.
Yeah.
Like, I threw him back. I said, give me something in the plastic, please.
Like, I don't think I like arrived in Greg's eyes until I was like, after like being an All-American, like my second time. He's like, all right, like a new pair of socks or something. Once a month.
It's so nice to hear that things don't change. Like, I love
not at all. I can't imagine now all those, that shiny new toy they have at that new facility. I gotta imagine he's still a crotchety old man.
Oh
yeah, you got to catch all the assistants in there, and they'll get you stuff on the side.
Yeah,
exactly. Max will hook you up. You gotta go to Max.
Don't
ask for a Big Mac.
Well, Chad, we mentioned before the podcast that Iowa offered you, and you weren't a walk-on, but you were close, as you put it.
Which doesn't make any sense because your high school numbers were ridiculous. We looked those up before the podcast. Your high school numbers were stupid.
Yeah.
It's 9-man, baby. It's like Tecmo Bowl.
Regardless, you're still playing against other warm bodies. I want to hear from your end, your perspective, kind of junior in high school, senior in high school, Chad Greenway. What was recruiting like? Why weren't other schools offering you? Like, from your perspective, how were those years?
Yeah. Junior and senior year in high school. So, think back, like when I was growing up in Mount Vernon, like, nine man football was a way of life. In South Dakota, you have three different levels of nine man now. So we played 9AA, which is the biggest level. My junior year, we had a phenomenal football team. I think we had 5 out of our 9 starters go play college football at some place.
Wow.
Mostly, NAIA, smaller schools, but nonetheless, there was a lot of guys playing. And I think the one thing that was for me was just trying to identify somebody who came from my area, who was good enough to get recruited. And it's hard to find. Ben Lieber's a guy who came from Vermilion, went to Kansas State, who I played with the Vikings with. Mike Miller was at Florida, went to the NBA. He was from Mitchell, which is near where I grew up. But in South Dakota, my senior year, I was the only one with a Division I football offer in the whole state. And so basically my junior year was about just showing what I could do, just put up, like you said, crazy numbers and hope that our team success would lead to like some collegiate offers or some people looking at me. So at my junior year, I'm dubbing VHS tapes during my study hall, literally like, old school. You guys are probably too young to even do that. Yeah. But like, yeah, I mean, it was before CDs, we're dubbing VHSs. I'm making these highlight tapes and send them off to all these colleges. I remember I sent them all over. And my high school coach was like as throwbacks it gets, double lipper all the time. I mean, and great dude. I mean, a phenomenal football coach and a great guy, but he just didn't have the wherewithal of how to help me get recruited. So I sent videos everywhere. Got a little bit of a few nibbles here and there. And then between my junior and senior year, I went to a camp out in Colorado. Really the first time I'd ever gone do anything like that. I got invited to what's called a Nike Combine, or at the time it was. Yeah, remember, this is 2000, man. I mean, this is a long time ago.
Yeah, we were 6 years old.
Yeah, it's nuts. And I mean, you realize that like the recruiting and the scout.com and all that stuff and now Huddle, like none of that existed. You couldn't do any of that stuff. So there was no rating scale. Like I think I got like, that was one of the first years they ever had like a star recruiting like level. And I was like a 1-star, and then everybody's a 1-star until you get an offer, then you become a 2-star. And that's what I was. But I think, so I went to that camp and I kind of like put people on notice because I ran like super fast. I could throw the ball a little bit. I was a good, decent athlete. So then people started to notice me, got a few more letters, but then nothing until the end of my senior year. And that's when people started getting really interested. And that's when Coach Morgan, Reese Morgan, he drove to my basketball game. I can remember we were playing Mitchell Christian in Mitchell in the Corn Palace. If you guys ever driven through Mitchell, South Dakota. And this is a story that Reese Morgan tells all the time of like getting pulled over because he's going too fast between Sioux Falls and Mitchell. And him telling the cop that he was coming to watch me play and to recruit me, and he gets a police escort to the Corn Palace.
Wow.
So, like, it was, when you're from, it's like small town Iowa, it's the same thing. Like, you're famous in a small town. And for me, like, I had done things athletically the other guys hadn't done. So people wanted to help me get to where, you know, they thought I could go. And, you know, as I mentioned, I went to that Iowa Northwestern game as my official visit. I ended up getting my only offer from Kirk Ferentz. So literally before the game, he's pulling on his pants, jock strap on, and he coached with a jock strap. Don't ask me how that happens or why he would do that.
That's just an old man thing. I think that. Yeah.
But I'm an old man now. I don't wear a jock strap. I don't know what better to add a little bit. But so he's pulling on his pants and he's like, "Little, hey son, we're gonna have a chance for you to, you know, scholarship for you to come to Iowa." I'm like, you know, kind of like, you didn't even know like what happened. I thought he offered me, and like literally Coach Morgan's walking me out. He's like, "You know, he just offered you a scholarship, right?" I'm like, "Yeah, it sounded like that, but I've never done this before. I've never heard that from my mouth before."
That's wild.
And
sounds like the Paulsons.
Yeah.
And 2 weeks later, I go to Nebraska, which is where I wanted to go. Because when you grew up in South Dakota, like, Nebraska was in their heyday in the 90s. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody wanted to go there because we're only 2.5 hours from Lincoln. And I go to Nebraska to Frank Solich, and he gets the Southern draw, which I didn't know he was from the South. And maybe he just invented that for me. But he's like, "Son, you know, we're going to have an opportunity for you to walk on to the University of Nebraska." And I'm like a broke kid, you know, farm kid. I have no money. My parents don't have any money. Like, we're just like trying to figure it out. And I'm like, am I going to take a free education ride to Iowa or pay a bunch of money to go to Nebraska? And I was like, this is pretty easy. So I become a Hawkeye. And that's kind of the way it went.
What a story. Well, I mean,
why does every story begin with Coach Morgan?
Morgan, though? Coach, yeah. Morgan.
Every single person that we talk to story starts with Reese Morgan.
Yeah,
Coach Morgan gets a tip and just finds his way in the middle of nowhere, Iowa, South Dakota, Nebraska, or something, and just pulls some guy out of a cornfield. It's like, yeah. Hey, you want to play football for the Hawks?
Coach Morgan knew that Hart didn't have stars long before.
Yeah. Coach Morgan's, I got chills talking about Coach Morgan. He's an amazing dude. And he came back and got Riley Reiff later on, and then Brady. Mm-hmm. And like, he's just kind of created that little bit of a lineage. There's a couple of Sioux Falls kids on the roster. So I think that he's kind of helped pull them in, but he's can't say enough about that dude.
It's hard for me to imagine being so passionate about coaching or about something as Coach Morgan is about coaching, because you got to think about the timeline here. Coach Morgan in this story, 2000 is the year, and he's in some gym watching you play a basketball game. 14 years later, he's still driving around Iowa. And he came to my high school. I was a walk-on long snapper. He had no reason to come and visit me. And he's still visiting the recruits. Like, he was born to coach and do what he did. And he
a funny story, just to kind of go backwards on the whole day that Morgan came there. So, and this is as redneck as it gets. Like, we drive to a school with rifles in the back window, and you guys probably are all familiar with this. But in the winter, so during basketball season, we drive our snowmobiles to school with our sidearms so we could coyote hunt on the way in. And you guys ever hunted coyotes with a snowmobile? Like, the idea is you get them out of their den, you run them over, you break their back legs, and then you shoot them with your sidearm. So like, that's what we did. So like, my buddies, like, we had open campus. So like, over the lunch hour, we would go out in our snowmobiles and we would go hunt coyotes. Like, that was normal. Like, I have five buddies that's in 37, they go trap. Like, they trap their way into school. Like, "What'd you have in your trap this morning, Kyle?" He's like, "Oh, you know, we had a coon and a couple muskrats, and we'll skin them up and sell them." What the hell's wrong with these people? But that's just how it was. So at that day that Morgan's coming to the game, we go out at like 12 o'clock lunch hour. We go out and we're riding our sleds, and I had my brother-in-law's sled at the time. And we're going over this one stretch that was like real bumpy. So we're going slow and kind of just trying to get some jumps. And the next mile is wide open, like South Dakota's, no trees, just wide open, flat ice, hammer it. I'm going like 70 and probably 50, but 70 we'll call it for this story. And
170.
I hit this little ripple that was coming off this shelter belt, and I just launch. And I feel the sled start to turn in midair, so I bail, right? And I skip down this old road that hadn't, you know, a non-maintenance road, like just skip down this road. The sled's like, I'm looking this way, like as I slide, and the sled's just like flipping like this. And I cracked the helmet from like eyepiece all the way back to this. And then I dropped 37 that night when.
That's the best. That's the new best story that's ever been told.
And that's honest to God, the true story. My parents were like, "You're such an idiot." I mean, Coach Morgan's coming to watch you play. Like, what are you all, you know, pissing around for? And yeah, so that's the best
thing. Wow.
Did you even know Coach Morgan was coming that night?
I think I knew they were visiting that night. I'm pretty sure. Yeah. But I didn't, I mean, it didn't matter. You had to go out and ride the sleds. I mean, what are you going to do?
You mentioned earlier how you're somewhat athletic. I think that's a severe understatement. I think you could have probably broken your back in that accident and still dropped like a double-double, probably.
Most likely, yeah. I mean, there's a chance.
Jesus. I mean, what a story. So then, and we don't have to follow an exact timeline, but you get to Iowa City and you took a redshirt in 2001 and I'm wondering, you know, you can kind of talk about your earlier years before the whole All-American story, because a lot of people know, you know, after you started playing kind of what you did. But I'm interested to know if there was a welcome to college football moment or maybe a time in those first couple years where you were like, damn, I don't know if I can do this, or because it's always
I want to hear a welcome to college moment, because you're from Nowhereville, South Dakota. Yeah. You played nine-man football. Like, it's not Iowa City where you're the man. I want to know welcome to college. Like, yeah, hey, this is pretty cool.
You know, I think that the one thing you guys will appreciate, you know, is when I committed to go to Iowa, I had chose, like, you know, from, again, Iowa over like walking on or going to maybe USD or SDSU. Uh-huh. But the thing about it was that I was so scared to go to Iowa City. I mean, when you're the only Division I recruit out of the state, everybody's eyes are on you. Like, there's a lot of, mm-hmm. I felt a lot of pressure, mm-hmm. and I think a lot of fear in that, and like kind of putting yourself out there, you know, as a walk-on, you do that every day, yep. right? As you go challenge. But because I got a scholarship offer, there was something that, like, I had to live up to. And that was, it put fear in me. And I think what it was is, like, I just kept building that chip on your shoulder about, like, I got to go prove everybody wrong that I really am good enough to do this. And I really can, you know, accomplish these things and be an All Big Ten player or whatever, or even just play. So I can remember going to the summer before we went there to school, we went there, you know, for like 2 weeks and trained with Doyle, just got baptized by him, like, for 2 weeks leading up to what, you know, to end up showing up for camp.
Oh boy.
And I remember jumping on like the pull-up bar. Like, I mean, given, like, I never worked out in high school ever. Like, we just worked on the farm. So we had a bunch of pigs and cows and we farmed like 2,000 acres. So it was basically work. And then I worked out a little bit during like PE class during school. And so when I got to the work, like, to work out, like, I never hang clean before, I never really squatted before, like, I, you know, pull ups. And I just, like, got on the pull up bar and he's like, do as many as you can until you can't do anymore. And like, it's me and Eddie Hinkle. And like, we went through that whole process together and it was eye opening. But the one thing I noticed, like, when I got there was, like, we're doing these, you know, doing running workouts and we're doing all these things. I'm like, all these guys that I hear about and had read about, like, I'm just as good as these dudes. Like, I can run with these guys. I can jump with these guys. I can lift with these guys. And the one thing that, like, and we can get to this down the road, but the one thing I always was able to separate myself was, like, just mental warfare. Like, I was just going to outcompete and I was just going to win every day. And I was just going to try to figure out how it could break you down and win. And I think that was the one thing, and you could just see it over time, is guys just couldn't hang. Guys couldn't hang day after day after day after day after day after day, and then just keep going. And that was what really set me over the top. But, you know, for going into college, it was a mentality of, how am I going to overcome this? Because I'm not as good as these guys.
Yeah.
But it was all mental. And I think when I walked in to Iowa City, it was about just how hard can I work and how can I prove everybody wrong.
How so?
That's like the walk-on mentality.
I was gonna say,
you need a scholarship, but it's a walk-on mentality.
I was gonna say, yeah. The for Kevin and Drake, who exactly to a T does that remind you of?
Josie,
yeah, Josie Jewell.
Josie. Then I was also gonna ask, like, did you ever like wrestle in high school? Because like, that just sounds like the wrestlers that we've talked to. That sounds like a quote right out of Tom Brands' mouth. Like, I'm gonna outwork you every day. I'm gonna just you just can't outwork.
He played basketball.
I think my dad was a wrestler. I played basketball. My dad was a wrestler, but I mean, I think it's more about just the project of growing up on the farm and having my parents. My parents didn't go to college. They got married right out of high school, started their farm, and just they were on the grind since they were 18. Mm-hmm. Got pregnant with my sister when they were in high school. I mean, just classic small town family. Nothing else to do, so you get drunk at probably on prom and have a baby.
Like, that's what sounds good.
Did some math, like, wait a second. So I think it was just about, you know, but when you're a farmer, like, it's on you, right? It's on you to, like, reap what you sow.
Yep.
And my parents are, like, just my dad's passed now, but just tireless workers at all times. And I just think it was the product of just the apple not falling too far from the tree, and just that's just how I think at all times. So never, you know, didn't get a wrestling background, but it totally is a wrestling mentality of I'm just going to break you down until you don't want to do it anymore.
Yeah, you said the word mental warfare. Drake knows all about that because that's basically his everyday life, and he kind of has a battle with his own mind. And Kevin and I both know all about that because Kevin grinded his way to the top as a walk-on all the way to special teams captain, team captain, our senior year. Mental warfare was basically the name of the game for me in conditioning.
I got a great mental warfare story for conditioning.
Love to hear it.
Yeah, go
Let's
for it.
Oh, well, this is NFL. So I was like a 8 year, 7 or 8 year pro at this time. Had obviously accomplished a few things and like had essentially arrived in the NFL, right? I mean, had a nice career, got to my second contract, was making a lot of money, and people kind of look up to you at that second contract. They're like, you have the experience and you know what you're talking about. And I would like, we'd be in the summer, right, grinding through workouts, and we'd be all there, our OTAs, and these young guys would just be like, I'm beating them every time, like without question, like that's what I have to do because I'm just like old and grumpy and like these guys aren't going to beat me.
Yep.
So I'm just wearing them out. And like 5 reps in, I pull this prank where like I just start acting super tired, right? And just like, oh, 5 in, I'm beating them, but I'm like just gassed and hands on the hips and I'm bending over. And then they start to like do the same thing.
Yeah.
Like they're now tired, like after 6 reps and after 7, I'm acting more and more tired. And then all of a sudden I'm like, wait, guys. And I just stopped acting. I was like, this is nothing. And like, I know I got you. Like you're mentally weak because you reacted how you thought you should be reacting. And I was just leading down this path. I'm like, if you can't handle this now, like you're never going to handle it when camp hits in July. And like, they're all just like, what an asshole. Like he was just like, what are you doing that for? But like, I was always playing those kind of like, you know, pranks, but like bringing guys along too. Like I was never there to like, once I had made it, like I cared about guys' careers and really wanted to bring other people with me. So I felt like I was doing things the right way, but like there's ways to show them how they're weak, especially mentally when you do things like that to them. And you'd be like, see what I just did? And they're like, yeah. And then they mentally hardens them.
Wow.
Well, that's a fucking awesome story.
I love that.
Yeah, that's a legendary story.
Right? Like eventually they're going to get this behavior. And all of a sudden they start see me do it. And all of a sudden they're doing it because they think I'm the best shape and I've done all these things. But I'm like, you guys can't act like that because I'm not really tired.
Right. And I don't think I've ever.
It's like 1984, I was one. I got tired one time and haven't been tired since.
I was going to say that. No story has ever been told that better demonstrates how much like a veteran player has influence over the younger guys. Body language, mentality, anything. Like, you know, they see it, they do it. So I mean that's just fucking awesome.
It is crazy.
I think the one thing about like if I look back at my career, like no matter where I was at, like I was never too cool to be enthusiastic. I was never like too cool or too good to have like a great attitude. Like because if you walk into a place to work out, you know, Coach Doyle's workout or whatever it is, like, you know, you're going to get your teeth kicked in. It's going to be a long day. Like, there's nothing better than showing up with a smile on your face that I'm going to kick Doyle's ass today, right? Like, he's going to get it. Like, I don't care what he has. Like, it doesn't matter. And, like, I think that – and, like, I remember E.J. Henderson, who was a middle linebacker with the Vikes when I came in, like, he thought it was fake. He's like, what is this dude doing? Like, what a tryhard. You know, the kid's now my 12-year-old. Like, what a tryhard, Dad. Like, but the reality is, like, you know, I had a lot of ability, but, like, my best ability was something that takes no talent. Like, just enthusiasm and attitude and showing up. Like, I don't care that I have, you know, was an all-pro. I don't care that I was a Pro Bowl. Like, I'm going to show up and be the happiest dude at workouts and just grind. And, like, hopefully that – then you look behind you, like, everybody's with you, right?
Yep, yep.
And – to me, like that sets you apart, especially at the highest level.
I can remember a severe shift in mindset about our third year, the really good year in 2015, when we were doing conditioning and Doyle started to get real heavy in his inter-rep talk to us about how are you talking to yourself? What are the words? It's all right. You're a busy man. We get it. Like, what are you saying to yourself? You're fine right now. You're okay. You can breathe. Stand up. You feel fine. And I started to not only listening to Doyle, but seeing some of the older guys react to that. I was like, I am fine. I like, this is okay. And that was like a real turning point for me. It's crazy how mental brings the physical along with. You mentioned bringing younger guys along with you. You played in maybe one of the greatest, not maybe, probably the greatest 3-year stretch of Iowa football history. And I'm very curious about what it was like in the locker room, in the facility during those 3 years. What was the language and the verbiage, you know, that was being talked about between guys, from coaches to players, players to coaches, players to players? What was the culture change there a couple years into Coach Ferentz's era that made the difference?
Yeah, the culture change, I mean, is like so easy to see. And it was, you know, I was on the front end of Coach Ferentz's career, but even within that 5 years, like, the guys that, to me, that you look at that resonate with, like, what flipped this program to be back to where it is now, like from the Hayden Fry, like 80s and 70s and 80s, was Bob Sanders, Bruce Nelson, Dallas Clark, Robert Gallery, Eric Jensen, you know, that crew of guys that struggled the first couple of years. And then we make the Alamo Bowl my redshirt year. We were like 7-5. And it was like, you thought we won the Super Bowl, like when we're going to the Rose Bowl, because we had dug ourselves out of this hole. And then you could see, like, the next year, like, things were turning. And, you know, there's no question, this, guys, this starts with the top. It starts with Ferentz and this starts with Doyle. Those two, I mean, those two flip this thing. And, you know, before you guys, Norm Parker and those are the guys that really changed this program. And then you bring in the type of kids that, like, didn't give a shit about recruiting and weren't big time recruits. They were just guys that were coming in willing to work. They're all like walk on type of guys that fell through the cracks. Maybe some got scholarships, some didn't, you know, but kind of good guys. They were just guys, and they just wanted to come and work and prove everybody wrong. And I would say, like, the biggest, if I could take like one saying from that time that just made the most sense to us, was like, we just carried this nasty ass chip on our shoulder at all times. Like, we were just tougher than you. We were stronger than you. We were going to wear you down, and we were going to win. And like, it is exactly. And that's what, like, if people look at Iowa football now from the outside, over the course of Ferentz's 20 year, whatever you call it, 20 year run, is you see, like, that's what his teams are like. And it's because of the kids he recruits. Even now, the 5-stars are coming with that same mentality, because it's just about that mentality and edge that you create. And to me, like, it's Doyle. You guys know that. He sets the tempo, and nobody's bigger than the program. And I just – to me, the one guy, like, that changed the tempo of how we play Iowa football is Bob Sanders.
Yeah.
Like, without – defensively, without question. The dude was a fucking maniac.
Yeah.
Hard-nosed motherfucker.
Yeah, like, you just don't make dudes like that. Like, there's – I've never – even in the NFL, like, you don't – like. Honestly, I'm thinking through my guy. Like, I played with so many good dudes in the NFL, like Hall of Fame players, but Bob was just different, and he just thought different than everybody. And like, so, like, I remember Abdul and I talking, like, because we should talk about, obviously, Abdul, because Abdul and I were just like all day, like, we would just like iron sharpens iron, yep. So one man sharpens another. Like, there's no better like saying than Abdul and I, like, for that. But we had to be we had to sprint to the football to beat Bob, because we're trying to get some scraps, right? Like, we're trying to put some numbers up and make a name for ourselves, and like. And if you didn't get the hell out of the way or get there faster, like, he was going to come through your back and like finish everybody.
That's insanity.
And like, and that was just, he just raised everybody's level of play. The dude, they'd take him out of practice. Like, he couldn't practice. We were going full practice. He never played. He was just like, man, fucking bullshit, man. He'd always be, because Bill Parker would be taking him out. And he should have been taken out, because he was hurting everybody. And that to me, like, if Doyle, I mean, obviously those are the guys to ask, like, who changed the scope of this program, and they're going to give you like all these names.
We didn't have to ask. They told
me
us.
He was the guy.
They would, I think, you guys can echo this. Coach Ferentz and Coach Doyle both probably 10 or 15 times over the course of our 5 years said the exact same thing you just said. Bob Sanders changed the culture almost single-handedly by himself. Like, he was that type of guy. What was it like?
I'm just going to stop you there. For every camp, first week of camp, Bob Sanders highlights were on the on the board for team meeting. You know, it was that Kansas State punt play where he's the gunner, and he like snaps the guy's leg in half, which is like an all-American punt returner. And then it was a kickoff, I think, versus Michigan, where he just knocks the dude's helmet straight off like 10 feet in the air. He's like, you know, this guy had like no other offers. He's like pointing them out. I was like, but he just came a hard-nosed motherfucker, and he just loved to hit people. And that's what we're looking for. And as I swear to God, it's every camp, 5 for 5.
Yeah, one speed. One, he played with one speed. He worked out with one speed. He trained with one speed. Like, at that point, he partied with one speed. Like, he was just like – he was just a dude, man. He was. And he was the alpha of alphas in that room. And he didn't give a shit about any – and he was, but he had your back. I mean, don't get me wrong. He had your back. But he just didn't, he didn't give a shit about anything. He was going to go play one.
I was going to say, what's it like – what's it like to know that he's the guy behind you? What kind of juice and just absolute confidence does that give other guys on that defense?
Yeah, I mean, just because you could just play downhill at all times. I mean, it was just, it was downhill and sideline to sideline trying to keep everything in front, and you know they're going to have your back behind you. But when he came up to fill the slot and run game, I mean, you didn't have to be concerned. I mean, he was going to come fill the slot in the run game. So he wasn't going to turn anything down.
That's absolute. It's a shame that his NFL career was, you know, kind of stunted by some injuries, because they were running down like the best 100 players of all time whenever they were doing that a while back. And I mean, he's up there for the one of the greatest safeties in football ever, I think.
Yeah, I was actually – so I played them. I played the – that's when we went to the Chargers, and I played them when Nate Kading tore his ACL and Bob tore his ACL, or whatever had happened to Bob, I forget. But both of them got hurt in the same game, and that's when we were playing the Chargers opening day, like 2012 or something like that.
Wow!
And that was kind of the end of both their careers.
That's crazy.
Bob is an absolute dream podcast guest.
Hearing you talk
too.
About Bob fires me up, man.
Hey. Oh.
Oh yeah, we're
yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. He also
yeah
yeah yeah. I mean, he just like, I don't think you can really replicate the intensity at which he did everything, just life.
He was just different.
He was, yeah.
You talked about Coach Ferentz and Coach Doyle. I'm interested to hear some of your favorite memories or just the things that you miss most about each of them. I think all four of us could say that both of those guys had such a crazy, immeasurable impact on our lives. And everyone has kind of their own quirks that they loved about both of them. I'd love to hear what you have to say about that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, with Coach Ferentz, I mean, just having a guy like that would pull you out of South Dakota, believe in you, give you an opportunity, and then have your back at every turn. And I think the best part to look at is that I don't care if you're Marcus Schnorr, who was, you know, my roommate and one of my best friends, running back, who ended up, you know, he's in medical device sales, lives in Coralville. I don't care if you're him or you're me at 11-year NFL career. Like, Ferentz will never forget you, your wife, your parents. They're always invited in. Like, it's a family. Like, it truly – everybody says it's a family everywhere else in the country, but it truly is in Iowa. And, like, I don't give a shit if we win 8 games a year from now until hell freezes over. Like, he's my guy. And, like, I'll never, like, think anything different, because I don't want anybody else running my program than him.
Nobody.
100%.
And I think that, you know, I think the biggest thing I could probably point to, like, if I could look at one event in my life where, like, Ferentz is like, this guy is just different than everybody, it'd have been 2014. My dad passes away. We're in Mount Vernon, South Dakota. It's right before Christmas. I had just gotten back from a NFL game, flew in. My dad's wake service. I look up, Doyle, Ferentz, Phil Parker are standing in the church line in Mount Vernon, like 60 people deep, just waiting their turn to say hi to my family and like just to shake hands and give me a hug. And that's just different. I mean, he's just different.
That's
that would be what, 2014. I'd been out of college for how long? I mean, like 9 years. I was 10 years in the NFL. Like, he had a lot of other stuff going on. You know, bowl prep and everything else was going on at the time. So, just an amazing dude. And like, my mom could call right now and he'd be like, what do you need? We'll do whatever it takes. And she would get what she needed.
That's wild.
So, but then with Doyle, I mean, it's immeasurable what he'd given me. I think just a sense of belief in myself, a sense that I can accomplish anything, a sense that team is most important, you know, being selfless. But I think the biggest thing he taught was like, our culture is different and it's going to be different. And the thing about it is, like, he sets the tempo, but he lets the players dictate. Like, when you walk in Like if I'm a senior and a freshman's walking in pissing around, like it's my job to stop that. And it's my culture that I've set, right? And it's Bob Sanders' culture before mine, right? And LeVar Woods before Bob's. So that, I mean, they set the tempo and they give us the tools, but they really let us do it. And I think mm-hmm. that's, I mean, I don't get to see those guys nearly enough as I'd like to, but those guys are impactful in my life every day when I just wake up and like be a dad and go about my business now. Like what those memories and those things they did for me, like those lessons and character building, like from the time I was 18 to 22 and left, like set me up for life.
Damn.
We've echoed the same things in our own different ways. You know, everybody who comes on this podcast has pretty much the same thing to say about them, is that no matter what kind of individual stories they have, their lives are impacted forever because they've learned so much.
Yeah. I think I was a senior and I had never had to put you guys have to push the wood. Was that still a thing?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So I never pushed the wood ever. And senior year, it was like summer going into my senior year. Like I was always the 20 minutes early for everything guy. Just probably like you guys were, show up, warm up, you know, hit some guns quick before the workout starts, just focus on the priorities. and I think Jake got
in trouble for that one time.
They had switched the lift times the day before at practice and I wasn't paying attention. I didn't get the memo and I was late. And it was like, you know, I had accomplished all these things. I walked in and everybody was fucking loving the fact that I had to push the wood, but he never said like, yeah, you know what? Hey, you're bigger than the program. It was like, get your ass down there and push the wood. And I did it. And I wouldn't have said a peep because I knew the standard was set. And like that's a small example, but to me, that's an example of like, it just doesn't matter who you are or where you're at in your career or football player. Like you hold the standard.
Do you think that's something that the fans, they hear about, but they just truly don't get because they haven't been there? And
you don't get it unless you're there. I mean, and I'll say that about anything like the NFL, like you don't get it unless you played there. Like you have an idea of what it's like, but unless you're in it, like you just don't know.
Yeah.
And it's something you can't, I can't even sit here and explain it to you to like make it make sense.
Yeah. And we just get it. Obviously, I think one of the things with this podcast that we've found is like, the whole idea for this show is we wanted to provide a transparency inside the program that had never been provided before, while still keeping kind of like that respect to the brotherhood that we have and all of the secret stuff that no one, I mean, not that they're secrets, but you know, the stuff that only people on the inside get to know. Yeah. And we've tried to explain the fact that the program is just different than other programs and Doyle is just different. But I think that's one of the things that often gets forgot, especially when the team doesn't do as well or something isn't going right, is they're, you know, when they want to call for the coach's head, it's like, they just don't, like you said, they could lose every game and I would not care because it's Coach Ferentz and Coach Doyle. And I know, you know, I don't know. That's just interesting.
I think the best way to put it, like if you could encapsulate how it's different in like a paragraph, you know, just when it's the summer program and just when you think you can't do anything else, right, he pushes you further. But then he makes you and forces you lean on each other to get through it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's Friday and you've had a long-ass week and you go through the worst workout of the week, which is always on Fridays, and you're just broke down and beat up and you're tired as hell. And then all of a sudden it becomes like, how are you going to lean on each other to get this done and be pissed off at me, but fucking figure it out because it's going to make you tougher at the end.
So your guys' summer Fridays were brutal too?
Oh, ridiculous.
What's the worst workout you guys ever did?
The hottest day of the year too.
The tire flips. I mean, it was like the circuits with the tire flips and the weighted vests and the agilities. God. And then the jingle jangles on top. And then like, you can't lose anything, of course. So like, you know, I had like Scott Chandler was a tight end back then. Like he was a great player. And like, so you're competing against all those guys. Abdul, Scott Chandler, like these studs that end up, you know, Brandon Myers.
Hey guys. Yep. It's me again. Got to interrupt the episode real quick to talk to you guys about Spotify. one of the sponsors of this podcast. On Spotify, you can listen to all your favorite artists and podcasts in one place for free. You don't even need a premium account. Spotify has a huge catalog of podcasts on every topic, including the one you're listening to right now. Yeah, we're on Spotify. I don't know how we did that, but pretty cool. Other things you can do on Spotify is follow your favorite podcast so you never miss an episode. Premium users can download episodes to listen to offline wherever you are, and you can easily share what you're listening to with your friends on Instagram. If you haven't done so already, be sure to download the Spotify app. Search for Wash Up Walk-Ons on Spotify or browse podcasts in the Your Library tab. Also, make sure to follow us so that you never miss an episode of the Wash Up Walk-Ons.
Like the semi group, and it was just like a battle. Like every day, like I wasn't going to lose to Abdul at anything. Like, fuck that guy. Yeah. But then, like, I walk off and I'm like, he's my best friend.
You're right.
You know what I mean? Like, I love it. The ropes, like where you have to try to break the rope from the other person. You got to stay close. I don't forget what that drill is, but it's like,
yeah.
Or whatever. Yeah, it's not. I mean, just everything is all. I mean, and then you look around and like you clean off the blood and you're like, damn, that was fun. We got better. And I feel like shit, but I'm through it now.
Yeah.
And you grow and get, and then stronger. And again, like, so it doesn't matter if you're 6 wins or 10 wins. Like, that's just football. Like, football, you know, the NFL is a better example. There's so much parity at the highest level that, like, that's going to happen. You're going to have 7-win seasons that should have been 11, right? And that's the same thing in college football. But that standard with Doyle and his group, like, never changed. And it's just new faces every year.
You hit such a good point that it's hard to kind of describe is the stuff that you do and that's written down on paper is – it's hard. Doyle knows what he's doing. It's gonna, but what creates the real stimulus is the culture of competition, and going out there as a long snapper, knowing that Doyle knew what I was capable of, is that's the thing. You don't ever want to let that guy down, right? And if he knows that I could beat Kevin on a certain ground chaser drill, which always happened because I was faster than Kevin. Example, Kev. Just an example.
All right.
Throw somebody else in there. You have to go do that. I have to go beat him because I can't walk away or off the field knowing that Doyle knows everything. He remembers every single rep of every drill. I can't let him know and have him know that I didn't do what I was capable of doing. And so that's where the
And as an older guy in the workout, you are expected to win. Whoever he pairs you up against in a competition, like, you better fucking win. Otherwise, he's going to remember it for like the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, and the great.
He's like, oh, you let a fucking freshman beat you in the tug of war? Are you fucking kidding me? You're a fucking fourth year Big Ten player, and you're going to let this 18-year-old kid drag you across the turf?
Yeah, I think the best example I have of that is I came back in the summer, like 2 or 3 years in the NFL, and had to be when I was younger because Pat was still playing Anger. And I remember I came out for the Friday workout. I was crushing it. I was with the linebackers. We're having a great time. We're just blasting through it. But I can remember we did an agility drill with weighted vest. And like Pat was like, I'm not fucking going to lose to Chad. Like, I don't care what he's doing in the NFL. Like, he just wasn't going to lose. And like, I don't know that I beat him, to be honest with you. And like, but Pat's my guy. He's an absolute stud. And like, I was removed of it, but when you come back and you're like, holy shit, like, this is different. Cause Pat was in it, right? He was in the grind going into his senior year, about to just crush that year. And that mentality was no different just cause I was in the NFL.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Speaking of Pat, sometimes referred to as Fat on this podcast. now, cause I'll say this before I even pose the question, you've taken care of yourself. Your hair is much better than his now, post NFL career. Yeah, it's gorgeous. Who's the better 43, Josie Jewell or Pat Anger?
Oh my gosh. That's impossible to answer. I think what pisses me off actually, now that I think about it and we can talk now on the subject, is that like 43 has now been skipped over. Like 18 is like garbage. Cause nobody wants to play 18. Like, it's playing linebacker. Like, you see the Doyle kid now has got 43. Yep. Like, I text Doyle, like, as soon as I saw it, like, I was like, what the F? Ridiculous.
They didn't even give Kirksey 18. Like,
no,
Michael
exactly.
Was probably there at that time though.
Yeah, he was. So like, that's like an impossible question to answer. I'll say Pat, just cause I was there with Pat.
Sure.
I know like his struggle and what he came back to do and accomplish. Josie, I mean, I was more of a fan. I mean, I was probably more of a fan of Josie and more of a friend of,
right,
of Pat.
Right.
But Josie's, I mean, is an all timer. I mean, I think I'm at this point, I'm kicked off probably the all linebacker, like all fairness linebacker team.
I don't think so.
I mean, think about it though. There's a lot of dudes.
There's some dudes.
A lot of guys. There's some dudes, which is great. Cause which is funny, like just kind of totally jumping off the radar here, but I was coming out at the combine, doing an interview with the Saints. And they're like, this guy is like just a dick, and these meetings are ridiculous. But he's like, why the fuck would we pick a linebacker from Iowa? Like, there's never been a good linebacker from Iowa that's ever done anything in the NFL.
Wow.
And, like, now you look at what we've done since then. And, like, I'm proud more than anything of, like, being a part of the front end of that. Like, to be able to prove some great linebackers now. Guys that are playing right now, winning Super Bowls. So, yeah, that's just part of this whole culture shift that's happened under Ferentz in the last 20, 25 years.
For sure.
I just texted Josie, let him know that you said that he ain't.
Who is
mixed play one time, Josie? My God.
Now, since Kluver asked a question about you versus Pat, who is better, 10 versus 15? 2010 versus 2015?
Oh, God, that's tough because I think it's 2004, but.
I'll tell you this. I didn't. Now that I've heard the personal story about Bob, I would not want to be on the field with him. I'm scared of Bob Sanders.
Yeah, I mean, our best year was 2001-2002, went to the Orange Bowl. That was my freshman year. And we had dudes all over the place. I mean,
yeah.
Dallas Clark, Robert Gallery, Bruce Nelson.
Like, I mean, dudes on the wall, there. Dudes.
Yeah. And like, so, I mean, so 2010 or 2015, I think for me, because you guys can relate to this now, because the closer you are to the guys that played and age matters. Sure. So I'd say 2010.
Yeah.
Sure.
And that's only because of that reason, not because I think one team's better than the other.
No, it's all right. I would say
I would say who could win a push-up contest like for the team. Like, and that was how we'd get to like figure it out.
Or bench reps or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Did
you guys see the And are your guys' names on the wall for all the strength stuff that was just posted on Twitter the other day?
I'm on the wall.
These two made it. I did not.
Can we just talk about what the fuck is going on with these kids these days?
Yeah.
They're not from this planet.
So
dude.
We got Dylan Doyle's not even 20 years old. He's squatting 600 pounds.
600 pounds.
He's not even 20 at this point.
Dude, but he's been training in his dad's program since before he knew how to piss in the toilet.
Yeah, I was a weight room guy, like in a sense that like that's where I busted my ass and like did what I could do. Like I was not one of these strong, like crazy freak strength guys. Like that's not how I played.
That was all three of us too.
But like that doesn't take. I don't feel like that takes away from like my like what I did. But like the story here is like. There are some guys that can play football at a high level on that wall that can also be super strong, which is impressive because just how you know, understand how the body works is like those things don't always connect. They don't always intersect.
Yep.
So I looked at that picture on that wall. I could not believe it, the numbers that were on there.
We had
something ridiculous. Yeah.
We had Tristan Wirfs on.
I was literally about to say, what did you think of Tristan's video? Is that the craziest thing you ever saw out of a college?
Crazy, like being that person before, like throwing like this baby weight around compared to him, like, and then seeing him do that with ease is just insane. And then obviously, love that he went out and produced at the combine. And he's gonna be drafted wicked high and have a great career, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'd love to see his signing bonus.
Yes,
he. So,
mentioning the combine, what is it like to be a first round pick? Because that's every kid's dream.
Yeah.
Like everybody closes their eyes and imagines being a first rounder and you did.
You know, you tell the story about like when you tell the whole story together, right? In sequence about like being a 9-man player, nobody really wanting you. And then you come into Iowa as the one offer and you grow your career and you change positions and you become a linebacker and figure that out. And form ACL as a freshman, like grind through that, come back. I took the senior starting position as Kevin Worthy, who was a senior, who was a great dude and a great player. I jumped him as a sophomore. My first start was against Ben Roethlisberger in Miami, Ohio.
Who you later picked off in the NFL.
What's that?
I said who you later picked off in the NFL.
Yeah, yeah. So like you have like when you tell the story and laid out in like linear fashion, like it to me like is a better story because now like you circle back and I'm on my farm in 2006 and like getting the draft and the call is just it's crazy to have that happen. There's no better feeling like it. I mean, nerve wracking and stuff, but oh, here's my 12-year-old. You want to say hi? She's the best athlete in the house, by the way.
Yep. She said,
just a drive-by. Yep.
No doubt. Yep.
No ego.
Not that humble about it either.
Mine, which is not easy. But so, like, being a first-round pick, there's no way to describe it other than just, like, unbelievable feeling. Just accomplishment at that moment for, like, 2 hours, and then you fly to Minnesota, and you're like, oh, shit, like, this is, like, for real now. Like, I got to go perform. So that whole mentality, we can talk about that too. But, you know, being able to accomplish those goals and become a first-round pick is – because there's so many things that go into it. You have to have a great college career, but then you have to be able to run and jump and do all these other things. And so, yeah, it was awesome.
I want to draw a parallel to what you said earlier from getting that, you know, being the one kid from your area to get the offer and then feeling like you had the weight of that and having to go perform at Iowa. Is it a similar feeling when you are still living that story, you're just a little further down the line and now you've got the first round draft pick behind your name and it's
yeah. Well, it was like a, you know, this isn't like a woe is me, like look at all the pressure I had on me. The reality was that it was mostly pressure put on myself.
Right.
And internalize and feel like I'm going to use this as fuel and go do it. And then when you go through it and you get into the program, like you kind of, and you guys can feel this, like you sort of had such tunnel vision when you were at Iowa. Like all I cared about was getting better yep. at my craft and making the team better and going to workouts and just grinding and getting my grades and figuring it out. And then you kind of wake up one day, you're like, holy shit, like I'm at the top of the hill and I'm getting drafted. And then when you get drafted as a first round pick, like, so the weight on my shoulders coming in as the underdog was a hell of a lot easier than the weight on my shoulders as a first round pick going to the NFL saying, now we're going to pay you.
Yep.
Now you have to perform. Mm. It's a different kind of pressure and it's a much harder pressure. No different than a team that's expected to win compared to a team that nobody, you know, that nobody expects to win as the underdog.
Yeah.
But the mentality never changed as far as that day-to-day approach of just wearing people down. And I think either way, like no matter what kind of pressure you're dealing with, when you just take it day by day and just slice it up and say, okay, today, like I'm going to do this and accomplish these goals and then move next day, next day, next day, next day. And you look around and again at the NFL or any other level or in life, people just can't hang day to day.
Yep.
They're just not tough enough. Mm-hmm. And that's how you separate yourself.
Your top of the hill was a lot different than mine. When I got to the top, I was, about 30 pounds in 3 months worth of chocolate milk, and I rolled down the hill really fast. So that was good. No, but that's, you put it into a real good way to understand that. 17th pick.
I got a question about the NFL. So you said that Bob was the best player you played with in college. And in my mind, Adrian Peterson had to be the best player you played with in the NFL, but I just wanted to ask and see if that was, in fact, the case.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to go against Adrian. I would say if I could put, like, my top five freaks, like, in the NFL, like, when I was playing, Steve Hutchinson just got named the Hall of Fame guard, like, hitting, like, a cement wall. It was like you didn't even understand how that was possible.
Did y'all do block drill up in Minnesota?
We did interior block drill, 9-on-7.
Oh.
Wow. Night. Yeah. You know how many years I did 9-on-7, you guys? Are you guys kidding me?
That is nightmare.
That begs the question, are you human? Because the fact that you're not broken into pieces after 15, 20 years of blocks.
Don't be so soft is all I would say right there. Stop being so soft and figure it out. All right? I already have you beat. Maybe you start this conversation room.
Hey, I never had to. Here's how many times I participated in block stroll right here. I was talking to Max DeFranco while it was going on.
Yeah. I have interior blocks drill. Abdul Hodge is the best interior blocks drill player in the history of, like, he knocked so many people, like, off of their feet. It was, either way, long story. Steve Hutchinson, Adrian Peterson, I would say physically did things that I'd never seen a human do. Like, the night before he ran for, like, 291, he had, like, the most ice cream I've ever seen a human eat. Like, he just... Like, his body is just, like, it's different. Like, us white folks can't understand, like, how this happens. But, like, it's just different. You guys know that.
Yeah.
Adrian's
sometimes up there. It's not fair.
Percy Harvin was one of the, you know,
Percy Harvin.
Biggest freaks like you'll ever see. His acceleration from 0 to 10 yards is, like, stuff you have to, like, you have to witness with your own eyes. Like, on TV doesn't even do it justice. It's ridiculous. I'm going to throw this name out there as a complete freak. Jim Kleinsaucer. UND basketball football player, 6'5", 275, like could put anything on the bar with a cup of coffee in his hand, like set it down and just like whatever, like having a conversation, like just specimen, like in-road blocker, but could run. I had one of the I'm going to say this, like I've never heard a ball get thrown before until Brett was my teammate, Brett Favre.
Sheesh.
And like you could hear the ball get thrown, yeah, like in the air.
I'll say this.
The thing whistled.
Yeah, Stanley has had that kind of zip a little bit. Like
I believe it. I believe it. Stanley's got just a hand cannon. But and I've never seen strength in a quarterback like Favre ever. So like I would say, you know, talk about freaks, like just physical specimen, like, but all tireless workers, all good dudes, all kind of cut from the same cloth. And Percy, I mean, Percy was the guy whose career ended too short because it was kind of, he was a head case, but that dude would do anything for his team. Like one of the best teammates you'd ever had, but he just couldn't handle anybody telling him what to do.
Damn. You got, you know, you've come across those guys. We played with so many of those guys come through Iowa and they could have excelled somewhere else, but because it's Doyle at the top of the program and because it's KF and they don't take any shit, it's just not the right place for them at Iowa. You mentioned all these names and you've already said how you were blessed to have a longer career than 99% of people in the NFL. I did some Wikipedia browsing. You picked off Culpepper, Eli Manning, Big Ben. You had a lot of experiences in the NFL that I'm sure were incredible. Any that stick out to you as just like some of the better times in your life? Like, damn, it's crazy that happened.
Yeah, I think, first one, I tear my ACL my first preseason game in 06. So first round pick, all these expectations, tear my other ACL. So that first year was tough. I mean, mentally just a grind. Like you're not really part of the team. You know, you're thinking of yourself as a freshman, you know, that's just in the training room all the time.
Yep.
Like you don't get to know guys. You're not out there grinding with them. You're in different kind of hustle. So it's like you're on the team, but you're not. And that was my whole first year in the NFL. So come back the next year, like in the NFL, if they're paying you a lot of money, like, dude, this is your position. Like, now you have to go earn it. Mm-hmm. So I would say the best, like, first crowning achievement was just getting my first start in 07, getting through that. And then I played, like, 8.5 years in a row without missing a game. So that was like, a big hurdle early, but got over the hump and figured it out.
You played damn near three times as many games in a row as most players even play, because the average is like three.
Yeah, I think it was like, I think so. My number got to like 120 something with playoff games. So,
which, you know, as a linebacker is fucking bonkers.
Yeah, I mean, and a lot of luck, but you know, a lot of you guys, I mean, you play through a lot of stuff. What did me in, and this is another great story, but we're playing the Patriots, second play of the game, I break three ribs in my right side.
Yuck.
And, this was been what, 2015. So I break three ribs. I thought it was like a side stitch. It wouldn't go away. So I'm like, the next play, like I had this super long play down to the goal line. So I break these ribs. I'm like, God, what was that? I got to run down like 40 yards, goal line play, fullback right on the chops. Like, just like, you had to make a decision, right? Like, I'm not going to walk off the field. There's like four younger guys they want to put in that pay. They make less money than me. They want to take my job. So I'm like, that's not an option. So I'm going to play through it, play that whole game. Another whatever snaps, Brady beats his brains out of us. And then that week, I figured I broke three ribs. Well, then I'm like, okay, well, I'm not going to stop playing. Clearly, why would I do that? It's a simple decision. So I miss a couple days of practice, and I come back, and I start against the Saints the next week. And I made it all the way to the fourth quarter until about 5 minutes left, and they pulled me out. And then my wife made me sit out like 3 weeks, and that's what ended my streak. So
the moral of the story is don't get married.
Most stories is we're divorced. No, I'm kidding.
You're on the street.
And the funny part was, and she was so pissed, is we had our third daughter the next day. So, like, after the Saints game, like, we're in the hospital having the baby. Like, I could barely breathe. Like, I'd hold myself up. I'm, like, holding the baby.
She's
like this,
in one room, you're in the other.
She's just so pissed. But, like, she's an Iowa athlete. She ran track at Iowa, so she was the captain of the team. She's an
absolute ball buster.
So you have absolute studs.
Yeah, I was just going to say, your kids are guaranteed Olympians.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I have four daughters, all girls, 8 or 12, wow. 9, 5, and 3. So I got to make a lot of money. This shit's expensive.
Wow.
but they are, like, they will say, like, she's out of the room now and the door's closed. Like, she is a complete freak, my 12-year-old. And then my 9-year-old's coming up now. So they play soccer and basketball. Like, they want nothing more than to be Hawkeyes, play for Lisa Bluter. Like, they love the program. So, and they haven't started running track yet. So, they have a chance.
I can't wait to see how that pans out.
Be sweet. Hopefully got some Greenway girls running the shop here in a few years.
That'd be sick. What do you –
Sure, none of them want to play linebacker for the Hawks?
They one could, for sure. My 5-year-old, I don't know. She might get her into hockey because she's an absolute killer.
That'd be great. I'll be
wrong, I think, mentally.
So the ribs break, and I'll say it was just a fluke and not attributed to you getting a little bit older in the league. But you were probably, I'm not sure what number you were, but you're probably one of the older guys in the NFL at the time. What do you attribute
your reality, man?
What do you attribute your longevity to?
You know, I'm not a massage guy. Only thing I did was ice tub every day religiously. That's why I have 4 daughters, they tell me. I don't know if there's any truth to that or not, but I did nothing extra. Like, I worked out 4 days a week every week. I stayed in Minnesota all off season. I never traveled to someplace and trained somewhere else, and I've stayed with my guys. Like, I think that came, you know, a lot of guys came back to Iowa City, which was an option for us to come back, but I always felt like it was more important, and it kind of started with my ACL being my first year. Is I needed to be here and train and rehab. Makes sense. I kind of just kept doing that. And the GM saw me in there all the time. The coach saw me in there all the time. I was the only one in the building for like 3 months out of the year, which was stellar. I mean, I never hung a weight in my own rack, like, ever. I'm just like lifting shit and guys are putting it on.
Wow.
So I think like all those things, but you know, when you get to contract mode in the NFL, it's about, okay, you have, there's a minimum, like, you have to be a good player, right? If you check that off, great. Okay, now what else can you do? Are you great in the community? Are you a great leader? Are you good in the organization? Can we count on you? Are you dependable? Like, all those things, I was able to check those boxes off. So I think in a lot of ways, like, having high character, being bred in that Iowa system and having that mentality probably made me more money than being a good football player, to be honest with you. And I think that's probably, if I could attribute it to anything, it's about being selfless, showing up every day, trying to work, and always keeping, like, football, like, what I did, not who I was, because I had a family. Like, right away, my wife and I had our first kid, like, our first year. So it was just always kind of kept in perspective and just ground, man. It was just it was that simple. I didn't do anything crazy.
Yeah, I think, man, that's awesome. I wish that as a young guy at Iowa, there was some way to get that through your head. You know, like, the stuff that you're going through then, it pays off so much more than just on the field.
I mean, it's life, right? I mean, you guys see it in your everyday, like, experiences, and you didn't play in the NFL, so it's like you have the idea that, like, this can impact your life. Like I say, I brought Marcus Schnorr and Matt Malloy, both my roommates, like, great dudes. Like, they're highly successful in what they do now because they play football in Iowa, not because they got hooked up with some connection. It's because of how they think,
right,
and how they work.
We've kind of made our way to the off-the-field, post-career part of the story, which you definitely haven't just sat back and rested. You're a part of multiple things. The one that seems to be the most in the public eye, at least from my point of view, and Drake introed it, is you now have your
Straight up vodka. Yeah.
You've got your own vodka, which is just legendary. Talk about that and where that idea came, and maybe tell a little bit about your own journey in entrepreneurship and post-career.
Yeah. Yeah, so Sean Considine's to blame for the vodka company, the great Iowa Safety. So Sean grew up with Mark, who is also a partner with Grey Duck. They grew up in Byron, Illinois together. Well, Mark now lives in Prior Lake, Minnesota. So we got connected through Sean. He's like, we have this idea. This was 2017. Like, I've been retired for maybe a year. And he's like, we have this idea for this vodka company. And it's going to be based out of Minnesota, produced from Minnesota corn, da 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 da. I said no like 6 times. Like, my whole career, like, you're taught, you know, like, I'm a farm kid, so, like, you know, pretty responsible with my money and conservative and, like, make a lot of things that, you know, financial decisions that make sense. Yeah. So I never really jumped into anything like this. And they offered me a great package on, like, here's how you can get equity. Here's what you have to do. Basically, like, not needing capital, just wanting, I get equity for, like, my name and, like, just being part of the company. So I'm like, this really, the risk is my name and put my stuff out there. So I said, to hell with it, let's do it. And then we rolled it out in August of last year. So we're about 18 months old. And like, it's been full speed ahead ever since. So our market share in Minnesota is a lot stronger than we are anywhere else. Sure. We're really hyper-focusing on Minnesota and trying to crush it here and then try to impact Iowa, South Dakota, North Dakota, Wisconsin as we grow. So we're making, we're doing a lot of great things. It's been a lot of fun. We've made, I mean, financially we're doing well. The company's doing well. We're strong. Even in this tough time, people still drink.
Everybody needs to drink.
I was going to say, you might be with all the happy hour Zoom meetings that are going on.
Yeah.
We could have all got some vodka for this podcast.
You know what? I've drank more in the last week than I have like in the past year combined. That's all I've been doing. Like, every night, I was grilling some stuff for the kids for lunch. I'm like, I need to have a cocktail. I'm grilling. Like, it's Sunday at like 11:45. What I was going to say is, I've learned a lot. I mean, that's the best part about this, about being an entrepreneur, is a lot of things I didn't know or understand about business. Like, I'm sitting in all these meetings now. We're trying to get new business. And we're trying to find new ways to get, you know, to market things in a creative world now where social media is so important. Mm-hmm. Like, it kind of opened up the door for small businesses and really athletes like myself to use the platform of the NFL, which helped me build my, you know, my followers, to now use that as like my own marketing tool for my own company. So you sort of own your brand, which a lot of NFL players or even professional athletes didn't have that opportunity pre-social media because you were controlled by the leagues.
Yeah.
So social media has been great for that.
On a much smaller level, you just described exactly what we've done with the podcast, basically, and kind of turning it into, we have merchandise that we sell, and just kind of our following. I'm not sure why the fuck anyone wanted to follow me or Drake. I know why people wanted to follow Drake.
Listen, we put out some good content, yeah, and we get stories from guys like Chad Greenway that nobody would be able to hear.
That helps.
Yes.
That helps. And like, mm-hmm. And like now, like you look at social media now, like if you have a way to get to people in social media now, and all you're doing is people are sitting around like looking at their phones like 24/7 because you can't go outside and it's cold out still in the Midwest and it's miserable and it's a pandemic. Like, what the hell is she going to do?
Right.
You're going to look at social media. Problem,
literally.
Right?
So is that what consumes most of your days now, is working on the vodka company, or do you have your hand in anything else?
So I run our youth basketball association in our town. So Wyzetta Girls Basketball Association, I run that. I have four daughters, so I wanted to jump on that right after my career and make that association better and mm-hmm. continue to have it be impactful. We have about 500 girls from second grade to eighth grade that's in our program. So I manage all that. And then we have our foundation, which has stayed strong even post-career. So we've had our foundation since 2008. We used to do a big food drive, raised about $25,000 to put meals in front of kids during the school shutdown. Mm-hmm. Gray Duck has been a huge part. I do a lot of corporate and speaking events. I started that when I was in college as well, getting in front of people and talking, and which is I think a tool that, you know, especially girls, I've talked to my daughters about doing, because if you can get in front of people and have a conversation, you know, you can be in a boardroom, you can be in front of people and giving a speech. It just opens up a ton of avenues for income.
For sure.
And that's mostly what I'm doing. I'm driving kids around. I'm coaching hoops. I'm just having fun, man. And
dad.
I think the thing, I appreciate football for what it did to me, and certainly financially and people and the avenues it opened up. But I appreciate football in Iowa for giving me the opportunity to now spend as much time with my kids as I can. Like, I can do whatever I want. I set my own schedule every day. And that's what football has provided me from now until my life is over, which is pretty awesome.
That's the dream right there.
That is the dream. He's living it, man.
Yeah, somebody's got to. Might as well be me.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Kevin, Drake, anything else for the man?
Are you the most famous person from South Dakota?
No way. South Dakota. Billy Mills, Olympic champion, runner. Lincoln McElravy, Iowa Hawkeye wrestling great. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm up there.
Yeah, you just named two guys that aren't quite Chad Greenway.
Mike
so.
Miller, NBA player, 17 years.
Mike Miller, you and him are in a fist fight.
Adam Vinatieri, but nobody knows he's from South Dakota. True. Adam Vinatieri is probably more famous.
Well,
for sure.
Nah.
The dude's still probably kicking.
He is.
He is.
He is. He's 45 and
he's
still kicking.
Which is insane. His hip
labor. Well, well, actually.
Well, I'll say this. We are extremely appreciative, Chad, of you coming on and taking time out of your...
Coover.
What?
Shut up. You didn't give me a chance to talk, man.
Oh, shit. Sorry.
Yeah.
So, Chad, I got one thing for you that really the only thing I really want to get out of this podcast. I don't know if you remember, but 2016, we're up in Minnesota, and Coach Wallace arranges for you to speak to linebackers for a little bit. And I'll always remember this, and it really stuck with me, is, you know, you talked about, you know, how some people think that fear is a bad motivation. You know, being afraid to fail is going to cause you to play, you know, tight or whatever. But you talked about how your fear of failure and fear of letting down your teammates was one of your biggest motivators. Can you talk about that from all the way back from South Dakota through Iowa, through Minnesota to where you're at now?
Yeah, I think fear, and, you know, as a dude, right, as a football player, it's hard to talk about things like that. Cause like, but at the end of the day, like, we're all scared. If you call it anxious or you call it nervous or whatever, but there's a fear there. And the fear started for me was like that letdown, like you talked about when I was going from Mount Vernon to Iowa, that fear of like letting down the state, letting down my family, letting down myself, right? That fear of like, I'm not good enough. Like, I got to go prove to myself and to the people of South Dakota and like the parents that offered me a scholarship. So like, I can't let him down, and Doyle, like, and then like when you're at Iowa, like, I think that fear is a little different. Like, you got to hold your stick there, right? I mean, you got to be part of the squad. And if like, you're not holding up your end of the bargain, like you said, it's like, Doyle knows what I'm capable of doing. And if I'm not doing that, like, that fear was real for me. And I would just eat it up and like try to use it. And then that fear of failure in the NFL, like you're a first round pick, which is like this lifetime dream, you've realized it. And that fear like drove me hard every day to be like, I'm just not going to be that guy that say I was, you know, that I was going to be a bad first round pick, that I was going to be a bust. And then once I got past that, I was like, I'm not going to be this player that's going to like let people down after he got money. Right. And I'm going to be motivated by the fact that I'm not going to take my foot off the gas pedal because of that. And like this fear of like becoming somebody that I wasn't, like, you're a small town kid from South Dakota, like, just be that guy. Like, it's okay to be him. Like, don't change. And I think when I think about like my career and like my life in totality, like what's driven me probably the most over anything, and the fear that's driven me the most over anything beyond sport, is the fear of letting down my parents, my grandparents, that family name, right? My grandpa Greenway, who's still alive, my last grandparent alive, he's in his 80s. Like, just dude couldn't be like more of an American, right? Just works his ass off. He's a farmer. He's worked hard his entire life. And like, for me to go out and have this platform and just screw it up and to not like put a positive name forward for my grandpa's name, to me, like, motivated me beyond belief. And now my dad's passed. And so if your dads are still living, like, take advantage of this opportunity to be like, to create that great relationship. My dad was an amazing dude, my hero, my whole life. And to be able to always make him proud, and knowing that he passed away, being super proud of who I was and who I had become and the dad I was and the player I was, and more importantly, my character, like, that always, that fear of letting those guys down, like, always has been there. And now that fear just shifts, right? I'm a dad of four. And I always get this, like, four girls, like, what's the first question thing I get when we're having daughters? Like, oh, I bet you wish you would have had a son. I'm like, well, bullshit. My girls are badass. And like, they're going to be
girl dad.
Yeah. And like, they're going to be badasses in their own way. And I'm going to just own that. And like, the fear of like, you know, I don't want to let my wife down. I won't let my family down. I don't want to let, you know, I don't want to be able to call my mom and be like, have her be proud of me because the decisions I made, like, that fear over any other like football fear continues to motivate me every day. And like, I try to wake up every day to try and just get better at something. And, you know, if there's more people that would just be self-aware of what they're shitty at and be like, you know what, I'm just going to get better at that, and I'm going to own it, and I'm going to go out and just eat it up, like, get better that day, like, we'd all be better off of that.
If people were less of backboards and excuse makers and more of people who would just look in the mirror and be like, okay, you know what, I am shitty at that. I need, yeah. See, the world would be a better place.
And that's accountability.
Drake, you know,
Mike Zimmer, like, I'll say one thing about like the NFL and coaches, like what makes Zim awesome and why I love playing for that guy is, and much like Ferentz and much like Doyle, it was the NFL version, is he didn't care. He does not care who you are, what your name is, or what you're capable of doing. If you do not hold up your end of the bargain, you will be called out in front of everybody on the football team, and you will be made an example of. And like, I love that fear because it holds me accountable. I love having leadership that holds me accountable to that. And then now it makes me be a leader because, like, you know, like, my wife is, she's crazier than I am. So like, can you imagine our girls? Like, she, like, our girls, like, they do something, like, we're jump their ass right away. So it's like, this is just not how you're going to live.
I love it.
You're going to pick up after yourself. You're going to clean your shit up. You're going to take care of your sisters. Like, this is how you're going to live. Like, there's only one way to do it. And if you don't do it that way, like, you're being shitty and you're letting yourself down. You're being lazy. This is just how we do it. It's not perfect, but I feel like it gives us the best shot.
I think it's pretty good.
I don't know any other way to do it. I think
that creates a pretty good mentality myself.
That's, yeah, agreed.
That's a good way to leave it off. All I know is that I'm glad I'm not a adolescent girl that's going to have to compete against your children.
You're going to have a tough time.
My biggest fear as a dad is trying to find four boys tough enough to marry these girls.
Yep. Whew. Yep.
And I told my wife, I was like, we probably have to find a farm kid from Iowa or something. They go to Iowa City College. It's my only hope.
Yep. Well.
Well, Ike Bucker just had the biggest child in the state of Iowa. So maybe in a few years he can. Yeah.
He just had a 10-pound child.
That's not surprising.
No, because Ike is a tractor, basically.
I just saw Ike last week.
Damn.
Or 2 weeks ago, whatever it was. He was up in Minnesota getting worked on.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was.
Yeah, he was up here, and he was getting worked on. I walked in. My 12-year-old just walked in. She has two broken bones in her L5 on her back.
Damn.
Don't worry. She eats that shit for breakfast. But she was in getting worked on.
Hopefully, she eats a lot of cereal with milk.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe some pasta.
Yeah, she's getting that. Yeah, she got hurt probably a month ago, and she's coming back. So Ike was in there where she was getting worked on with this guy that's like he's a wizard in Eden Prairie. So we were seeing him, and Ike was in there. I had met Ike when he was in college, but you know, it's been years. So good. He's a huge dude.
Huge.
So he was a quarterback, apparently like a stud quarterback, right?
Yeah,
he was a stud.
Yeah, the funny story I always tell is I played him in basketball in high school, and it was after we had both committed, and he didn't know who I was yet and that I was actually being serious, but I was guarding him, not sure why. And I told him in the middle of the game that if he wanted the lane, I would let him tomahawk it. I would just step aside and let him have it. And he didn't believe me. And years later, he's mad he didn't take me up on the opportunity. But Ike was insane. Oh, yeah. Ike was insane in high school. He played safety sometimes. Kevin, can I thank Chad now? Kevin froze, I think, of course.
I think he did, too. It's the Gervais internet,
It's
dude.
The Gervais internet. anyway, Chad, thanks for giving us an hour plus of your time. I know you've got better things to do, but this was honestly, like me and Drake said in the start of the podcast, we grew up watching you play. You no doubt inspired both of us in high school, and it was an honor to be able to sit down and talk with you and have you contribute to our show.
Hell yeah, man. Thanks for having me on, guys. It was a good time. Yeah,
absolutely.
We should do this.
We really appreciate it. That was about the most fun hour and 15 minutes I've had in the last 10 days or so.
Yeah, this definitely helps during the pandemic.
For sure.
We will definitely have you on again at some point. And again, that's episode.
The next one, we got to bring Abdul in. It should be an Abdul, a Thunder
100%.
And Lightning.
You got it.
Thunder and Lightning. Now, just think this food for thought. How often is there a black-white combination where the white dude's the Lightning and the black guy's the Thunder?
And Doyle always used to talk about that. He always used to say, everybody would give Abdul, like, they would say, oh, man, Abdul, he's a freak, everything. He's like, no. Chad was the better athlete of the two. Doyle gave you your credit where credit was due on that one.
Oh, good. Yeah. Next time is Abdul and myself together, because that dude, I don't know why we haven't hired him yet at Iowa since he's at USD right now coaching. Like, that dude is awesome.
It'll probably happen.
Let's get it done.
And we will.
That sounds like a real pleasure.
Yeah, and we could definitely get that done. But that's it. Episode 100. We've hit the century mark on the podcast. And after this, I'm not sure we can get much better. Hopefully you all love the episode with Chad and y'all continue to listen. That's it. Enjoy the pandemic and quarantine and listen.
Drink Grey Duck vodka while you're locked up in your house because there's nothing better to do.
Yeah, put this on repeat and drink the Grey Duck vodka.
Thanks, guys.
That's it. Walk-ons out.
Hey everyone. I'm MJ Acosta Ruiz.
And I'm Lindsay Zarniak.
And together we'll be hosting the On Her Turf podcast. This summer, On Her Turf is hosting a daily Olympics podcast
that focuses exclusively on women's sports and the amazing women competing in Tokyo.
We'll bring you interviews with Olympians and in-depth analysis on your favorite teams.
Plus, we're going to talk about some of the challenges still facing women's sports today.
So join us daily at On Her Turf as we cover all the excitement of the Tokyo Olympics.
Be sure to check us out on Apple Podcasts and be sure to follow On Her Turf on Twitter and Instagram too.